8:30 a.m. KSDP Radio. I'm Kels Hetherington, and this is Meet the People for September 14th, 2010. My guest this morning is Mike Connolly. Mike is a spokesman for the Club for Growth. Before joining the Club for Growth in 2009, Mike worked as a speechwriter or spokesman for Jim DeMint, Dennis Hastert, Tom DeLay, and Henry Hyde. Well, Mike, thanks for coming on the program to discuss the Club for Growth's endorsement of Joe Miller, the Republican nominee in the Alaska U.S. Senate race. Good morning to you.
Good morning out there. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're on the phone from Washington, D.C., where it's actually the afternoon, your time. So,
Three o'clock in the afternoon out here. You know, so Congress is probably left for the day.
Yeah. Well, Mike, before we discuss the Club for Growth's endorsement of Joe Miller, perhaps you could give us a brief overview of the Club for Growth's mission. Many people have heard about the Club for Growth because of its endorsement of former Alaska Governor and 2008 Vice Presidential nominee Sarah Palin. However, many do not know more than just the name Club for Growth. So help us, if you will, to better understand the Club for Growth's overall philosophy.
Well, Club for Growth is a national network of citizens from all 50 states around the country, about 55,000 members right now, who are all dedicated to the pro-growth principles of economic freedom and limited government and individual responsibility, the same principles that were embodied in the Constitution of the United States that made our country the strongest, safest, and most prosperous nation in the world, and that we believe, if we return to, in terms of federal policy, will yield results once again.
Hmm. On the website, it says the philosophy of the organization is the goal of tax policy. The goal of tax policy should be to raise the amount of money needed to fund legitimate functions of government while doing the least amount of damage to the economy and respecting the principle of treating taxpayers equally. So I just thought I'd add
that
in there. Pretty much what you said. Now,
Go ahead.
Now, what does the Club for Growth actually do for political candidates that it endorses?
Well, we have a couple of different things. First of all, there's the Club for Growth, sort of the umbrella organization or the parent organization, is not-for-profit. It's an issues organization that we try to encourage federal policymakers in Congress and the administration to pursue pro-growth policies, limited taxes, restrained spending, regulatory reform, free trade, things like that. And that's sort of the issue side of it. Then we have an affiliated political action committee, the Club for Growth PAC, that does formally endorse political candidates for federal office. And we, through the PAC, we will help those candidates try to win primary elections, general elections, whether through encouraging members of the Club for Growth around the country to support that candidate or through independent expenditures like mailings or television or radio advertisements. In one sense, one of the functions that the Club for Growth serves is that because of the geography of the country, if you are a pro-growth, economic, fiscal conservative living in a district or a state that is very, very liberal just because you have your neighbors happen to be liberal, and whoever you vote for is probably not going to be elected. Club for Growth offers an opportunity for you, if you join and then to help the PAC, you can then have your voice counted. You can pool your resources with other like-minded pro-growth economic conservatives around the country to support candidates who can win. So, for instance, if we have members in places like Boston or New York City or San Francisco, there are some conservatives there, though they're not enough to win elections. But if they join the Club for Growth, we can then point them to candidates like a Mike Lee in Utah or like a Jim DeMint in South Carolina or like a Joe Miller in Alaska and say, all right, maybe you can't elect somebody from your state because of the politics of the state, but you can make sure you have your voice heard.
And that's excellent because it doesn't really matter where a group of people have, like-minded individuals, have a Senate seat from. It just matters that they get a Senate seat and are represented in the U.S. Senate and in the House of Representatives. Now, you say there are two ways in which you support candidates. In what way are you helping candidate Joe Miller in Alaska?
Well, we endorsed Miller shortly after the initial primary night The following day, we endorsed him because we wanted to make sure that if there was a long, protracted recount effort, that he would have the resources he needed. Senator Murkowski has a very large fundraising advantage, so if there was going to be a protracted legal political battle, she would have been in a very good position to wage it, and we wanted to make sure that the level playing field applied. As for now, yeah, we're just monitoring the race. We are encouraging our members to help Mr. Miller's campaign. We believe that he is going to be a real star when he gets to the Senate, if he's fortunate enough to be elected, and we are working to help make sure that he is.
So right now and to date, have you sent him any money?
We have been encouraging our members through emails and mailings and things like that, 55,000 members around the country, and saying, you know, hey, you may not have heard, but there's this guy, Joe Miller, up in Alaska. We've met him. We like him. He's great. He's going to be a real star. If you have a little bit of extra money, you want to help him out, please send it, and we'll make sure he gets it. And when this practice that we have, when we encourage our members to donate, 100% of what we get, we send on to the campaign. We don't take a cut off the top. This is just our way of trying to pool resources, which really kind of leverages our membership into influence races like this. But yeah, we've been helping Mr. Miller.
Do you have any dollar figure to share with us about how much money you've sent on him?
I don't actually. As a matter of policy, we generally don't get into that until after campaigns are over and things like that. But we do all of our necessary filings with the Federal Election Commission. So if you want to go snoop around on web pages, you can find out how much it is. But we generally send up checks every couple of days. So it's always just if I told you now, it would be wrong in an hour. So it's just a matter of keeping up with all the numbers.
How many candidates does the Club for Growth generally support an election cycle, and how many have they endorsed in this election cycle?
Well, again, it's the PAC that does the endorsing, just for the any legal eagles who might be listening. We generally do. It depends on the cycle. It could be as few as 12 or 14 and as many as 20. We have done actually a little bit more this time around. I think we're up to 24 or 25, both House and Senate candidates. And that's a function of, you know, a really strong slate of candidates around the country, a lot who have come up out of this Tea Party movement in response to the outrageous overspending and overreach of the Obama administration and the Democratic Congress. Part of it is really just that it's such a great environment. We want to make sure that we can maximize the gains, not simply for the Republican Party, because we're not a partisan organization. We're actually not always terribly popular with the Republican Party. We are strictly a fiscal conservative, economic conservative organization. So our concern is not so much the letter next to the guy's name. We want to make sure that he votes right and that he can stand up and be a leader and take on the special interests here in Washington. And, you know, in Washington, government itself is a special interest. So we want to make sure that we get guys who are coming to join the fight and not join the club, and that certainly describes Joe Miller.
Why is the Club for Growth backing Joe Miller, and how is Joe Miller better than the incumbent Senator Lisa Murkowski?
Well, a few things. Joe Miller is really a textbook case of the kind of pro-growth fiscal conservative who believes in limited government, believes in the founding principles, founding constitutional principles of the United States, the principles that allowed our economy to grow into the richest and most powerful in the world, which has lifted, you know, our own country and people around the world out of poverty. The wealth created by a free market, by the free enterprise system, by small businessmen and entrepreneurs and investors free to experiment and innovate and compete is something that a government command and control economy cannot match. If you look at Miller's record, what he's standing for, he is making absolutely no bones about the fact that he is a constitutional conservative who simply wants to restrain government, get it back into its constitutional limitations, and allow the American people the freedom to grow and to innovate and experiment and invent again. Senator Murkowski has a different view. She is very comfortable, in our view, far too comfortable with the idea of a government managed economy. Things like earmarks, things like the cap and trade energy tax, which she supported, things like you know, things that along the lines that Senator Murkowski didn't support, but things like stimulus, government spending. She's very comfortable with all of the money that government spends. We're not, and Joe Miller isn't either, and we believe that government, for the most part, is a drag on the economy, and that it needs to be cut down to size to allow the American people and the American economy to grow.
But these are true gradations of caliber, because the Club for Growth rates members of Congress, and you give Senator Murkowski an 83%, saying she's 83% of, I guess, acceptability to your organization. So Murkowski's not that bad, but Miller represents a better choice for both Alaskans and Americans. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's no question that Miller is going to be superior to Murkowski on these economic issues, number one. And incidentally, for your listeners, a Club for Growth, who might be interested, Club for Growth doesn't take positions one way or another on social issues or on defense, security, foreign policy issues. We strictly do economic stuff. So other people might have other concerns about Murkowski as well. But as far as our perspective, she did better this year. And as general rule, we find that Republicans do better in years when they're running for re-election, mm-hmm. Which is part of the problem. We are not looking for people who are going to vote conservative one out of every 6 years. We want people who are going to be like Jim DeMint in South Carolina or Tom Coburn in Oklahoma, who are going to stand tall, stand strong for these principles without apology every day of their term of office. And we believe that's the kind of character that Joe Miller is going to be.
Now, most people were really stunned when Joe Miller won the Republican primary. In fact, on primary day, the Wall Street Journal was calling Senator Murkowski's winning the Alaska Senate primary pretty much a foregone conclusion. Was the Club for Growth as surprised as most Alaskans by the outcome of the Republican primary?
I think it's safe to say no. It was very similar, you know, to the situation in Florida, where moderate Republican Charlie Crist was seen as a foregone conclusion. He was going to win the primary, Republican Senate primary, against this nobody named Marco Rubio, who nobody had ever heard of. As soon as you met Marco Rubio, you realized he was a different kind of candidate and wasn't going to just slip away and allow Chris to beat him. We had the same reaction when we met Joe Miller. Obviously, there were other considerations taken into account, and clearly we were surprised. Everybody was surprised, but we were not shocked. Joe Miller was a very serious candidate. Looked like he had a good organization in place. He obviously attracted a lot of volunteers. We saw clearly that there was a chance for him to do what he did. It was obviously a long shot, but I don't think we were shocked. We were definitely surprised, but we weren't shocked. And I think that, you tell me, and from what you hear from your listeners, but my sense is that people who met Joe Miller face-to-face were not super surprised that he was able to pull this off. He's a very impressive guy.
Yeah, he's a superior caliber candidate to Murkowski, and we had him on the radio on 8:30 a.m. KSDP. If you're just joining us here on 8:30 a.m. KSDP, this is Meet the People. I'm Kels Hetherington. My guest this morning on the phone from the Club for Growth in Washington, D.C. is Mike Connolly. Well, Mike, since the Republican primary upset in Alaska, we've heard different explanations, and we've touched on some of this answer, but I'll ask this question anyway. From those close to the Murkowski camp, it's one explanation for the senator's early defeat is that, and this is a very interesting kind of excuse that's being provided, is that Senator Ted Stevens died, and he was intending to campaign across the state of Alaska with Murkowski, and they feel that it would have helped Murkowski's reelection chances a lot. And then there are those who claim that Senator Murkowski lost in the Republican primary because of ballot measure number two, which sought to require parental consent for an underage girl to get an abortion. These moderate Republicans say that the conservative nature of the ballot measure brought all sorts of very conservative Republicans out to vote and therefore allowed Joe Miller to have the upset in the Republican primary that he did and to win it. Has the Club for Growth thought about these explanations and thought about how it could impact the general election?
Well, there's a couple of thoughts about that. The incumbent senators have obviously some very large tangible advantages over newcomer opponents, but they don't have all of the advantages. Newcomer opponents often are not well known, especially if they are really ideologically strong, if they're can really deliver a strong message and provide strong contrasts to the incumbent, then they have a chance. You know, in the very beginning of a race, they say you don't need money, you just need an idea. And that's what Joe Miller brought to the race there. As for why Murkowski lost, in particular of these ballot initiatives, I'm sure they played a role. I'm sure everything played a role. In races that close, everything plays a role. You know, if you have any campaign that comes down to, 1.5% or 2%, you know, anything can throw off those things. The weather that day could have had an impact. Everything has an impact. But the fact that it was that close at all suggests that Joe Miller was running a very good, very strong, very smart grassroots campaign, and he was able to tap into the same kind of frustration, the same kind of concerns that that Americans are, Republicans in particular, Republican primary voters, are expressing about the direction of the country. We've had other incumbents knocked off in Pennsylvania. Arlen Specter switched parties and then lost. In Utah, Bob Bennett lost. And and part of the problem was they were seen as a part of the problem rather than a part of the solution, and they're being replaced on the Republican side by really strong, principled reformers who are coming to Washington to do something rather than just to be something.
Yeah.
As for the impact of the general election, it's going to be another tough, strong race. But the combination of Joe Miller's appeal, and I think he will appeal innately to Alaskans rather than simply, ideological conservative Republicans. I think if you listen to him speak, you get the sense of how deeply he's thought about these issues, how principled he is, how strong his character is going to be. He's not going to come to Washington to become like Washington. I think that's really a good test in this election cycle of when you're trying to figure out who to vote for, is who is going to take Alaska values to Washington, and who is going to bring Washington values back to Alaska. And I think Joe Miller is clearly the former there. He is an Alaskan, and he is an Alaskan by choice. And the values that he is bringing in terms of limited government, individual liberty, lower taxes, lower regulations, he's going to deliver that message to Washington and make Washington listen.
Mike, I just go back to this question. How does the Club for Growth explain Joe Miller's coming first out of nowhere politically in Alaska,
yeah,
and then coming back from a 30-point deficit in the recent Republican primary to win the thing? This is amazing.
Well, yeah. Well, it's like this. There are a few stages. First of all, you have Senator Murkowski, I think she would probably admit, did not take the Miller challenge as seriously as she should have. So, of course, it takes that consideration. The same could be said of Bob Bennett in Utah. Especially in 2010, if you're an incumbent with a few, more than a few in Senator Murkowski's case, with a bent toward big government, the comfort level with big government that does not fit with the Republican Party, with the conservative movement right now, you have a problem. Either it's going to be a small problem or a big problem. You have a guy like John McCain who was challenged from the right for a lot of the same reasons. He took the problem very seriously and ran a very aggressive campaign against J.D. Hayworth and eventually skated on to victory and was going to, in all likelihood, return to the Senate. Senator Murkowski didn't take that tack. She didn't want to take Joe Miller that seriously. So that's the one side. The second key factor is, there are a lot of people who are going to be concerned about Lisa Murkowski's record. The things like cap and trade, things like, in terms of the size of government, things like earmarks and special interest favors. These things are all perfectly legal in Washington. In Washington, we say the real scandals is not what's illegal, but what's legal around here. And that's kind of the culture that Lisa Murkowski came out of and that she brought to the office. So there was always going to be this sort of you know, soft underbelly of the Republican electorate that was looking for an alternative. And then it was simply up to Joe Miller to not only be an alternative, but to be a really credible, to make a strong, credible case, a principled case of why he should be that guy and not just, you know, none of the above. Why he, you should vote for him and not for her. And those three things put together made for a historic and a very exciting win.
Okay, if you want to call in and join the discussion on the radio here, you can dial in at 383-6359. That number is 383-6359. You'll be live on the air when I pick up, so just hold on until I indicate you should ask your question. You're, of course, Mike, watching the Senate race in Alaska very closely, and you're in Washington.
Yeah.
So you probably know that Senator Murkowski is still in Alaska. And she is discussing the possibility of waging either a write-in campaign or maybe still, I know it's been said that it's impossible, but there's still this outlying possibility that she could join the Libertarians for a place on the ballot. How important is it for Republicans and a Republican victory in Alaska this year that Murkowski stay on the sidelines and really concede this race? So, you know, to
right.
Joe Miller. How important
right.
is that?
Well, again, we are the Club for Growth is not a partisan organization. We, you know, for the most part support candidates who happen to be Republican, but not because they are Republican. Senator Murkowski, on the other hand, is frankly kind of a partisan Republican. Like, she really is a member of the inner circle. She's a member of the team here in Washington with Mitch McConnell and Lamar Alexander and these, you know, national names that we all know. She's, you know, a member of that team in a way, frankly, that the Club of Growth isn't, and frankly, Joe Miller isn't. So her leaving the party just to pursue this desperate campaign of ambition doesn't strike me as a very good idea for her personally and professionally. I mean, this will be a fundamental betrayal to you know, her colleagues and her friends here in Washington. So she obviously has to make her own decision, but she'd have a very hard time, I think, you know, still claiming to be a Republican if she's working against this Republican process.
Mm.
Joe Miller won fair and square, and this is a big problem that we're seeing around the country. For a long time, and you've probably had similar situations in Alaska over the years, where a conservative challenges an establishment moderate, the moderate wins, and it's immediately hop to, you know, the conservative is supposed to fall right in line and salute the flag and say, all right, we're all on the same team, we had a fair fight, you won, I'm with you. And for the most part, that's what happens. We're seeing a very strange trend this year where it's the moderates or the liberal Republicans who lose and then bolt the party altogether. Charlie Crist in Florida is no longer a Republican. He was talked about as a possible Republican presidential candidate. He was on the short list, you know, reportedly for John McCain's vice presidential pick that Governor Palin eventually got. And now he's not even in the party. Says he can't stand the party. Arlen Specter left the party, ran in the Democratic primary and lost. Didi Scosafava was a, you know, you may not have heard, but was a kind of a high-profile House special election in November last year, who, again, same thing, quit the party and backed the liberal Democrat over a conservative rival. So it's a very difficult situation for the national party because the people who have always preached that we need to have a big tent are the ones leaving rather than allowing other people into it. So it's, again, it's a pretty unfortunate precedent that's already being set. And it would be unfortunate, I think, if Senator Murkowski added to it. That being said, we have absolute confidence in Joe Miller's ability to win this race against 1, 2, 3, or 15 opponents. He is far and away the best candidate, is going to be the best candidate on offer, on the ballot in Alaska in this race in November. And we look forward to a long and distinguished career here in Washington of him just ripping the Senate limb from limb.
Okay. Well, how good is Joe Miller when he is compared to candidates running for the Senate of the same conservative bent elsewhere in the country? Is he just as good, better, worse? Where is
I think he's right at the top of the list. Yeah, I mean, right now, Jim DeMint is probably the cream of the crop in the United States Senate today, followed closely by Tom Coburn, right along with Tom Coburn in Alaska. DeMint has received a 100% score on the Club for Growth congressional scorecard every year we've done it. He's never cast a bad vote in his entire career in the Senate. That's a very impressive standard that he has set. But I think that standard is going to be equaled in coming years by this crop of very strong, principled, pro-growth conservative Senate candidates coming along this year. Really, it's been a perfect storm in 2010. We're going to have, you know, Bob Bennett in Utah is an incumbent senator who favored government takeover of healthcare system. He's going to be replaced by a constitutional lawyer named Mike Lee, who's going to be a pro-growth constitutional conservative star. I think he and Miller will get along very well. Sharon Angle in Nevada is going to be a great, great candidate, and she is a great candidate, and she's going to make a great senator after she beats Harry Reid in November. Marco Rubio, as I've already mentioned, in Florida is a great candidate. Pat Toomey, who is the Club for Growth's president formerly, is taking on very liberal Joe Sestak in the Pennsylvania Senate race. It's a guy named Ron Johnson that we have endorsed is running in Wisconsin. Ken Buck in Colorado. There really is, right now, there's really two or three solid pro-growth conservatives in the Senate on any right now, with DeMint and Coburn, and then to a certain extent Bunning or perhaps Vitter in Louisiana. And I think come January, you're going to have 10 or 11 of them. And keep in mind, it's important for folks to remember, because D.C. is so far away and the Senate workings are so convoluted sometimes. The Senate is designed so that one person can really have an enormous influence. You know, Jim DeMint is a very junior senator, but he is one of the most influential guys in the entire place because he's willing to stand up when nobody else is. If he can do that all by himself, if he has seven or eight allies, guys like Joe Miller and Mike Lee and Marco Rubio and Pat Toomey and Sharon Angle and Ken Buck, the Senate is going to be a very, very different place, even if the Democrats retain control in next year.
Well, that's my next question. What is your expectation for midterm elections, and is it a possibility, mathematically speaking, with the candidates we have out there, that Republicans could take the Senate and maybe the House? Is that a likely story, unlikely, possible?
I think the House, it's still too far away to make any kind of firm pronunciations, but the projections for the House inside Washington, the gut feeling people have, I think, is that the Republicans are probably going to take the House of Representatives, and the question is only how big is the majority going to be. Right now they need 39 seats to take over control of the House of Representatives to gain the 218th seat. The question is whether or not they're going to get 42 and have a very, you know, razor-thin majority, or are they going to get 65 and have a more comfortable majority. And that'll really just come down to all kinds of factors having to do with the economy and then individually in all these races around the country. In the Senate, it's a heavier lift because they only have 41 seats, the Republicans, so they're going to need 10 to take over. And picking up 10 Senate seats in one election, it's possible. You look around the field right now, and it's possible mathematically, but it is going to be a very it's going to have to take a very big night for that to happen. I think the consensus is that it's probably maybe between 6 and 8, maybe, that they'll pick up. It'll get very close, but they won't take it. But especially from our perspective, and I think from a lot of what I imagine Joe Miller's supporters are wondering, is less important, frankly, than the Republican takeover of either House is the conservative composition of those Republican delegations. That is to say, Joe Miller replacing Lisa Murkowski is not technically a pickup for the Republican Party. They're both Republicans, right? Mm-hmm. But from the perspective of a pro-growth, you know, Tea Party conservative, that is a pickup. It's going to be a fundamental change in the outlook of that senator, of that seat, on economic issues, on the size of government, on things like extending the tax cuts and repealing the health care takeover, things like that. And so there's a lot of those situations where we're having moderate Republicans being replaced by very conservative Republicans, really strong, principled, pro-growth conservative Republicans, who are going to make a big difference even if it doesn't technically change the R and D breakdown of the Senate.
Mike, excellent point. One final question. The Club for Growth's website says, where it discusses support for Joe Miller, that Joe needs to run an aggressive attack ad program during the general election. Why is that necessary? Because rumor has it that Scott McAdams, who's going to be on this program later this week and is the Democrat running in the Alaska U.S. Senate race, is rather weak and very left of center. So why would he need to run such an attack program in the general election?
I'm not aware of. He's going to have to. Well, I think he's going to have to run. I'm looking at the page. It says he's going to have to run a very aggressive race against McAdams, and I think that's true. But I think he's going to face. He's going to be facing a lot of negative attacks. I think the Democrats and liberals are going to come in and believe that Joe Miller is weak because he's not Lisa Murkowski and he doesn't have $2 million, that maybe they can run a bunch of ads and try to pummel him and distort his record and his views and try to sneak in a Democrat into this seat. I don't think that Joe Miller needs to run attack ads, but again, that's up to him. He can run his campaign. He's clearly shown in his race against Senator Murkowski that he knows how to run a campaign and knows how to get people to vote for him. Specifically about his race, that's going to be his own determination. But I think that his message is very, very strong on its own merits. He doesn't have to, he should obviously look for ways to distinguish himself from McAdams and to try to make sure people understand what electing a Democrat to the United States Senate means in an economy that with, almost 10% unemployment, that's $13 trillion in debt. We've got to shut down the spending. We've got to stop these earmarks. We've got to stop all of the mess that government is creating around the economy. And Joe Miller understands how to express that message. We are not encouraging or commenting one another on what kind of ads he ought to run. We believe that he needs to run a very aggressive race, and he needs all the help he can get from our members, and that's why we're encouraging them to contribute to his campaign.
Well, thanks, Mike Connolly of Club for Growth. And anything else to add?
No, just make sure to get out and vote in November.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you for having me.
That was Mike Connolly from Club for Growth in Washington. They're basically a conservative organization, and they have endorsed Joe Miller for U.S. Senate. They did actually do that after he won the primary in Alaska. That primary, of course, was the one that involved Senator Murkowski and was a major upset. Well, that is Meet the People for Tuesday morning. It is September 14th, 2010. I'm Kels Hetherington, and we'll go back to the music right here on 830 AM KSDP, Sandpoint, Alaska.